It is about rebuilding transatlantic partnership after a very difficult August with the exit from Afghanistan and the European reaction.
U.S. President Joe Biden heads to G20 Leaders Summit in Rome. It's Friday, October 29th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Pakistan eases restrictions at Afghan border crossings. U.S. to open air borders for foreign visitors. Boosting outdoor play by children across Australia. Russia warns Turkey after Ukraine drone strike. And Candyman movie remake tackles racial divide in U.S. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden will attend the G20 Leaders Summit in Rome before continuing to the United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, in Glasgow, Scotland. VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wadakaswara, who will be traveling with the president, has this report on the key issues leaders will discuss.
Preparations are underway in Rome, where G20 Leaders Summit will be held. With Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin not attending in person, an opportunity for U.S. President Joe Biden, said National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan earlier this week.
The U.S. and Europe will be there, and they'll be there energized and united at both the G20 and COP26, driving the agenda.
But it won't be easy. Biden must repair U.S. credibility following the messy military withdrawal from Afghanistan and rift with Paris over the AUKUS deal that scuttled a French submarine contract with Australia. Leslie Benjamori, director of the U.S. and the Americas program at Chatham House, via Skype.
It is about rebuilding the transatlantic partnership after a very difficult August with the exit from Afghanistan and the European reaction to that. But it is then about concrete issues. So climate, the global minimum corporate tax agreement, and then debt restructuring is really important.
Biden will emphasize his pledge to cut greenhouse gas emissions to about 50% below 2005 levels by 2030. But U.S. global leadership on the issue also depends on Biden's domestic climate agenda in his infrastructure and social spending bills currently struggling in Congress. Matthew Goodman, Senior Vice President for Economics at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said via Skype.
The president, unfortunately, is not going to be in the same strong position he would have been to push other countries to make further, more ambitious commitments on climate.
Phasing out coal is a key contention, as is the pledge by rich nations to provide $100 billion a year in climate financing to help developing countries reduce emissions and mitigate the impacts of climate change. Chinese Vice Minister of Ecology and Environment, Ye Min.
In the context of the official implementation of the Paris Agreement, these issues will affect political mutual trust and the ability of developing countries to take climate-related actions.
On the pandemic front, humanitarian organizations say wealthy countries failed to fulfill pledges made at last year's G20 to ensure global vaccine access, instead hoarding hundreds of millions of doses for their own populations. Natalie Arnoux, head of regional advocacy at Médecins Sans Frontières Access Campaign, via Skype.
What we would like to see is them to clearly set up a schedule to provide these doses to COVAX for the countries in a transparent way with a very clear timetable.
Biden, a devout Catholic, will meet with Pope Francis at the Vatican prior to the G20 and COP26. Patsy Wadakaswara, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. Before departing for his overseas trip, President Biden says he has reached a historic economic framework with Democrats in Congress on his sweeping, though scaled-back, domestic policy plan. Biden's remarks at the White House followed a trip to Capitol Hill to pitch U.S. Democrats on the package. The proposal is now $1.75 trillion, and without paid family leave and other priorities. But it's still a sweeping plan that includes new health care, free pre-kindergarten, and climate change programs. He wanted a deal before departing for the global summits. The White House believes it can pass the evenly divided U.S. Senate. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. After Afghan withdrawal, U.S., Pakistan work to rebuild trust. Watchdog records 30 recent cases of violence, threats against Afghan journalists. India slams new Chinese land border law. Blinken orders review of U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. China, Russia working together on security threats in Central Asia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The UN Refugee Agency says it welcomes recent steps by Pakistan to ease restrictions at official border points with neighboring Afghanistan. The agency says this enables smoother movement of goods into troubled Afghanistan and keeps people from turning to human smugglers to cross the border. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Afghanistan is a landlocked country and depends largely on cross-border trade for survival. Since the Taliban took control of the country in mid-August, Pakistan has tightened border controls. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Baba Baloch, speaking on Zoom from the Afghan capital Kabul, says the border disruptions have created many hardships. He says they have affected trade and regular population movements. In some cases, he says, the border restrictions may have acted as a barrier for people seeking safety.
Disruptions have left many Afghans, including women and children, and those needing urgent medical attention, stranded for weeks, especially at the Chaman-Spin border crossing between the two countries. This border has remained closed for the past 3 weeks now.
Baloch says the new steps will ease fears of people being pushed into the hands of human smugglers and traffickers with deadly consequences. He says so far, a predicted mass exodus of refugees from Afghanistan has not materialized. To date, he says only some 50,000 people have fled to Pakistan and Iran. He says the bigger problem remains the huge number of people displaced inside Afghanistan. This year, he notes, conflict has caused nearly 700,000 people to flee their homes, for a total of 3.5 million people uprooted within the country. He says the UNHCR is mainly focused on providing essential humanitarian assistance to displaced Afghans. He says his agency has provided tents, emergency shelter kits, food rations, and many other relief supplies this year to nearly 500,000 people.
UNHCR is also arranging further airlifts of humanitarian supplies into Afghanistan, in addition to the 3 flights that recently landed in Termiz, Uzbekistan. As we continue to scale up our humanitarian response, more resources are urgently needed ahead of the harsh winter that could bring deadly consequences for Afghans.
The UNHCR is appealing for urgent international support to displaced Afghans living in dire conditions, both within and outside the country. A recent UN report finds more than half the Afghan population, nearly 23 million people, are suffering from acute hunger. It warns the looming harsh winter season will cut off access to many areas of the country where families desperately depend on humanitarian aid for survival. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, next month the U.S. will ease restrictions that have been in place during the COVID-19 pandemic on international travelers arriving stateside. Happening now in Asia, a decision on the bail application of American journalist Danny Fenster, jailed for the past 5 months in Myanmar, has been delayed because the judge broke his arm, the journalist's lawyer said on Wednesday. Fenster, who has been charged with incitement, was detained in May as he was about to board a flight to visit his family in the U.S. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you're with us on VOA Asia. The United States will soon reopen its air borders for foreign visitors who are fully vaccinated with an approved vaccine or those who can present a negative COVID-19 test within 24 hours of travel. The new rules take effect November 8th and only limited exceptions will be allowed, senior Biden administration officials said during a background briefing with reporters.
This policy puts public health first. It is consistent and stringent, protecting U.S. citizens and residents as well as those who come to visit us. Because it puts public health first, exceptions to this policy will be extremely limited, primarily children under the age of 18 and certain individuals from countries where vaccines are not yet readily accessible. Those who are eligible to travel but not yet vaccinated will need to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test within one day before their flight's departure. For those who are vaccinated, the testing requirement remains 3 days before their flight. And that testing requirement applies to everyone, not just foreign nationals, but also U.S. citizens and lawful permanent residents.
Vaccine exemptions include travelers from about 50 countries with exceptionally low vaccine rates, which include some of the world's poorest nations, many of those in Africa. Children under 18 years of age are exempt from the vaccine requirement at this time, but will still have to present a negative test. Exemptions will also include certain COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial participants and those who need to travel for emergency or humanitarian reasons, according to the White House. Additionally, those who are granted an exception must agree to be vaccinated in the U.S. if they intend to stay for more than 60 days. Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Children as young as 3 will start receiving COVID-19 vaccines in China, where 76% of the population has been fully vaccinated, and authorities are maintaining a zero-tolerance policy toward outbreaks. All the important stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Children will be the keynote speakers at a meeting in Australia aimed at reinvigorating outdoor play to help tackle an epidemic of social isolation and loneliness. Phil Mercer reports for VOA from Sydney on an issue that's been exacerbated by the stay-at-home orders during COVID-19 lockdowns.
Informal outdoor play has been declining in Australia. Academics say Australian parents have become increasingly cautious and worried about the safety and well-being of their children. Experts say there are a range of factors contributing to the decline in outdoor play, including increased traffic, a lack of city planning, and greater housing density. Stay-at-home orders during COVID-19 lockdowns have exacerbated the issue. But parents also fear abductions by strangers, although officials say such incidents are incredibly rare. In Western Australia alone, there were 15 kidnapping and child stealing incidents reported in the past year, according to official government figures. The summit is aiming to address such issues with an all-inclusive platform, including children's participation. Nicole Schwier's 11-year-old daughter is one of the keynote speakers at the Childhood Summit. Schwier refuses to allow her children to play in the streets outside.
You hear of kids 11 and younger just being snatched. And it's not that I don't trust my neighbours. We know our neighbours great. But I don't trust my neighbourhood anymore. And that's a big problem.
Academics say a lack of outdoor play is robbing children of vital social skills they'll need as adults. Those attending the Childhood Summit in Brisbane will hear of the potential physical and mental consequences. Ayano Moser, one of the organisers of the conference, says a lack of play is leaving some children dangerously isolated.
We're seeing the highest rate of youth suicide that we've ever seen. That is largely to do with the fact that children have been disconnected from each other, haven't built up those social skills to cope with social settings. And social isolation and loneliness is such an epidemic. You know, I've heard it earmarked as the next biggest health crisis.
Medium and high density housing, which is relatively new in Australia, is presenting new challenges. In Sydney, almost a quarter of households in apartments are families with children. Experts are warning that their needs are not being met. They say developers should put the well-being of children first, with carefully designed parks, playgrounds, and safer streets. They say they believe play is the work of childhood, which creates resilient and healthy adults. The three-day conference brings together children, teachers, architects, urban planners, and academics. The aim is to forge so-called play action plans for towns and cities across Australia and beyond. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, Australia plans to crack down on online advertisers targeting children by making social media platforms seek parental consent for users or face fines of $7.5 million under a draft law. A government statement says the legislation would protect Australians online and ensure that Australia's privacy laws are appropriate in the digital age. Social media platforms would be required to take all reasonable steps to verify users' ages. The platforms would also have to give primary consideration to the best interests of children when handling their personal information. Facebook says it is reviewing the proposed law. Making headlines in Asia, Taiwan Defense Minister Chu Kuo-chung said Thursday that Taiwan must be prepared to defend itself and could not entirely depend on other countries to help if China were to launch an attack against the island. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Russia is warning Turkey over arms sales to Ukraine after a Turkish-made drone attacked Russia-backed rebels in Ukraine. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
A Kremlin spokesman has warned that Turkey's ongoing arms sales to Ukraine threaten to destabilize the region. The warning follows Kiev's release of a video Tuesday showing a Turkish-made drone used for the first time against Russian-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine. Independent defense analyst Ardar Mevlutoğlu says Kiev sees the Turkish drones as a potential game changer in its fight against separatists, which it has been battling since 2014.
A single armed drone equipped with a couple of bombs may destroy a whole air defense battery or a very expensive electronic warfare system or take out some armored vehicles, etc. So that asymmetry provides some capability for those armies that are facing significant threats, such as Ukraine.
Kiev has purchased several Turkish drones and this month announced an agreement to build more in Ukraine itself. A prospect that analyst Özgür Ünlü Hısaçıklı of the George Marshall Fund says will alarm Moscow. Turkish-made drones played a key role in Azerbaijan's victory last year against the Armenian army over the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh enclave.
The drones that Turkey provided to Azerbaijan were a decisive factor in the battle, and Russia knows this.
Turkey has also, according to analysts, successfully used its drones in Syria and Libya. Ankara is also seeking to cash in on the success of its drones, with reported sales to Ethiopia and Morocco now pending. But analyst Mevlutoğlu warns the Ukrainian drone sales pose a significant risk to Turkey.
Turkey has good relations with Russia, especially in energy sector. Russia is building a nuclear power plant in Turkey, and we have cooperation with Russia in Syria, so Turkey has good relations with Moscow. On the other hand, we have very good relations with Ukraine, as evident in the defense sector. In the event of a conflict between Ukraine and Russia, Turkey would find herself in an extremely difficult situation.
But some observers suggest Ankara could see its drone sales to Ukraine as powerful leverage over Moscow in a number of regional disputes that are going on between the two. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Scientists led by NASA and the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics say they may have spotted an extragalactic planet. While nearly 5,000 planets from outside of the solar system, but within our galaxy, have been detected, this may be the first planet found in another galaxy. VOA's Rick Pantaleo tells us more in today's Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists led by NASA and the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics say they may have spotted an extragalactic planet. Over the last 30 years, astronomers have discovered and confirmed the detection of nearly 5,000 extrasolar planets, which scientists say are found outside of our solar system, but are mostly located within 3,000 light years away in our own Milky Way galaxy. This discovery could be the first planet to be found to exist in another galaxy. The astronomers making the discovery say that the candidate planet is located about 28 million light years away in the spiral galaxy Messier 51, which is also known as the Whirlpool Galaxy. Using NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory, the scientists spotted what they believe is a planet by looking for transiting planets in dips of light at X-ray wavelengths. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
In other space news, NASA is debating whether to try to fix a jammed solar panel on its newly launched Lucy spacecraft en route to explore asteroids. The problem cropped up shortly after the October 16th liftoff from Florida. Officials say that one of Lucy's two huge circular solar panels is not fully extended. Any attempt at reopening the panel would not occur before mid-November. Everything else on the spacecraft is working properly. The nearly $1 billion mission seeks to explore asteroids near Jupiter. And now for some movie news. Candyman, the latest film by Jordan Peele and Nia DaCosta, a black female director whose star is continuing to rise with higher-profile projects, is a remake of the 1992 original by Bernard Rose. The reimagined Candyman addresses the racial divide, gentrification, and police brutality in the U.S. city of Chicago. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
In Candyman 2021, screenwriter Jordan Peele and co-writer and director Nia DaCosta pay tribute to Bernard Rose's 1992 Candyman, which takes place in Chicago's notorious housing project, Cabrini Green. The movie tells the story of a black man accused of handing out candy with razor blades to kids, gets arrested, tortured, and killed.
Right there on the spot. A couple weeks later, more razor blades and more candy. He'd been innocent.
So he's who?
Candyman ain't a he. Candyman's the whole damn hive.
Candyman, he's a concept. He's a story. He's a boogeyman. It's an epidemic of violence on black bodies in this country.
He's real.
Candyman is how we deal with the fact that these things happened. That they're still happening.
Jordan Peele says as a young teen, he was influenced by Bernard Rose's Candyman as the first black lead antagonist in the horror genre.
It felt very daring, and it felt very cathartic, and it was terrifying.
Now, almost 30 years later, Peele's Candyman unfolds in the neighborhood where Cabrini Green used to be.
Cabrini Green has been torn down and is fairly gentrified now. And the story that felt resonated to me now is the story of my fear of the white space.
His story views commercialization and gentrification as a threat to black culture. Anthony McCoy, the main character in Peele's and DaCosta's Candyman, is a promising black artist working in a predominantly white industry and grappling with identity issues. He finds inspiration in the Candyman lore and unwittingly summons the monster which starts a new murderous spree. Only this time, Candyman targets his victims based on race, says Northwestern University's Associate Diversity Provost Robin Means Coleman.
There is absolutely no question that this film, Candyman 2021, is speaking back against the kinds of violence that we're seeing in targeting black people. When there is a disrespect, an abuse, a disregard for the value of blackness, that's when you see Candyman show up.
Director Nia DaCosta, who grew up near Cabrini Green, says evoking Candyman's name five times before a mirror is also a symbolic act of not forgetting black lives lost to violence and police brutality.
Say the name of the person, say Breonna Taylor, say Jacob Blake. Because a martyr is a powerful symbol. If the name isn't remembered, then the name, the person, the life that was lost, that's the most important thing.
Candyman.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Coscao, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.